Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true-transparency-pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
Glad you're with us for this hour, because Titans General Manager John Robinson is here, as promised, as the plus one guest for this upcoming hour. Good to have you in. How are you?
Good. Thanks for having me on.
How did we rope you into this exactly? I forget. It's been a long time in the works.
$50 US, I think it was.
50.
Just 50?
Yeah.
You're cheap.
Cheap date.
Like it.
We bang hats on this show, and Chad Withrow came up with this phrase, day one of training camp.
A buddy of mine, a huge football fan, he has spoken for a long time about banging hats, that it's time to bang hats. Whenever the season gets here, he says he's ready to bang hats. We like to be a show that bangs hats here. So this is a fully padded practice every day. It's the way we go about our business. That's sort of the ethos of the show. Do you approve of this?
Sure. Far away.
He doesn't care if any of us get injured.
No, you guys,
if we go down with a bad ACL, it's no skin off his back.
What's the countdown to camp like for you when it actually gets going?
Yeah, you know, it's there's always that feeling, or the air smells a little different for me, and the wife can tell I'm itching to kind of get back to the office and get back to what I do. I'll sneak away from home, you know, around lunchtime or go in early and get some work done before we actually, the report date is date X. I always go back a couple of days early. I guess I'm a glutton for punishment. But I'm
You're
just
antsy.
I'm just antsy. I'm ready to get going. I'm ready to get the guys back, ready to get into a groove.
You're ready to bang hats. That's what we're hearing.
Bang hats. Yeah, ready to bang some hats. But it's, you know, it's good. And, you know, it's new this year. I got some new players, new coaches, and was just anxious to get back and kind of get the schedule going and get into a routine for training camp.
We're hearing a lot about this first 22 days of practice where a lot of injuries occur. Are you biting your nails the same way Paul was biting his when his mother was in studio? Like, are you that nervous when it comes to this time of year?
I heard about that, and there may have been a little pee drizzle too.
There's a puddle under the seat.
But yeah, I mean, anytime you go out there, there's that risk that you might not come away with a healthy 90 guys at the end of practice.
Why does it tell you that it's the first 21, 22 days, the first 3 weeks? Why do a lot of injuries occur?
And Wednesday is day 21, by the way. Okay. So if you make it through the Bucs practices, you've cleared the 22 days.
Be in good shape. I think it's just the newness and getting back in. These guys haven't had pads on for a while, getting their bodies back acclimated to contact. And we try to give them some breaks throughout the course. You know, we'll go shells or we'll go uppers and mix in full padded. It's a stark contrast from what it was. It just seemed like yesterday to me when I was in New England, it was like 10 double days in a row. And
yeah.
I can remember Vince Wilfork walking up the stairs and he was like, but it's all player safety and the health of our players is at the forefront of what we're trying to come away with.
Where's the trade off there? So Mike Vrabel's been telling us about, you know, charting the GPS and the other stuff that you get from practice, that being a factor in, say, minimizing Corey Davis for a couple days here and not playing him in the first game because his output has been so much. But on the other hand, you guys talk about, you know, condensed offseason and the lost snaps and how crucial they are to the timing and all of that. We're not going to know if you avoided an injury by not playing him because it won't have occurred. So how does that equation bear out for you if, say, through a couple weeks of the season, looks like he could have used more work?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's in our training room. The availability is as, if not more important than ability. So the being available to go out there and practice and work, it takes a conscious effort by a lot of people to make sure we're monitoring the players and that they're healthy. We've got to try to get them to September for a long season. So the reps that he might miss or another player might miss out on the field, you know, he can make up through film study or through meetings throughout the course of the day or night.
Will you take us behind the scenes of planning a joint practice with another team? Like, it's one thing to get the team to travel, right? The other thing is, how do you split the reps? What does one coach want to do versus the other coach, and how you actually get things done for both organizations? How detailed is it in these meetings?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of discussions when we start to kind of map out and try to set up our preseason opponents. That's the one thing that we kind of have control over is we get to reach out to other teams and set up our preseason schedule. We try to keep it as logistically, from a travel standpoint, easy as possible, you know, so we're not flying all the way across the country and back for a preseason game. But having some, I think, some familiarity with coaches. Certainly, I have a familiarity there with Tampa, with Jason and the staff and Dirk. I was there with all those guys, so it'll be a good opportunity for us to get a look at, you know, a 4-man line. I think they're predominantly a 4-down defense, and will be good for them to get a look at a 3-man line or multiple what we run. But there's a lot of rules that are going in place, you know, as far as for you're going to be on this field, we're going to split this field. There's no fighting. There's, you know, all of this stuff. There's a lot of conversations that go back and forth and texts that get exchanged to make sure that it's beneficial for both teams.
What? How many teams across the league would you say that you have a level of familiarity with that you could do something like this? You said it helps when you have familiarity with that team, like Tampa Bay. How many teams out there are like that with you in this regime?
I'd say probably 5 or 6, just off the top of my, you know, off the top of my head. And that are logistically in a place where, you know, you're not flying all the way across the country to play another team. So, again, Tampa is trying to get the same thing out of it that we're trying to get good work. It'll be a nice breakup for camp for our players, get to go against different players. We'll get to see different, you know, route techniques or pass rush techniques, blocking from their players, and hopefully we'll get a lot of good work done.
John Robinson is in studio with us. Jarrell Casey had the contract extension before camp last year. We've seen it now with Lawan and Walker and them getting paid. What message are you sending to the locker room by extending those three players in particular?
Well, I think those three guys have came in and bought into what we want about be about philosophically. They've been productive players for us. They've all, you know, earned postseason recognition with their play, and they're leaders on our football team. And I think it's if you come in here and you do what we ask you to do, you perform at a high level and you buy into that team first mentality, then we want to keep you around here for a while. We'll do our best to do that for everybody. Within the confines that the way the CBA is set up with the salary cap and all that.
And that didn't happen with Kevin Dodd. And I have to pay you a compliment. And we talked about it in studio on the show that day. You came right in and said, hey, you know, I've got a draft better. I've got a scout better. It's on me as well. Not a lot of people say that. That seemed easy for you to say and take some accountability with that. Was it easy for you to go up there on a podium and say just that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we hold the players accountable. I have to hold myself accountable as well. And in that situation with that particular player, as I said earlier, you know, when I made the statement, I have the utmost respect for Kevin and the young man that he is, and whatever reason it didn't work out here. But at the end of the day, it falls on my shoulders. I've got to do a better job scouting. I've got to do a better job in the process of finding guys that are going to be totally immersed into what we're about every single day. So at the end of the day, it starts with me, and I've got to do a better job.
You saw from afar this team kind of fixed the Pac-Man Jones error first round pick by finding Courtland Finnegan in the 7th round, who kind of bailed them out when Pac was away for a year and didn't pan out as a first round pick. You've got Aaron Wallace, Josh Caraway, Sharif Finch now, who looked pretty damn good in his first game. Do you like the odds that one or more of those guys can become what maybe Dodd was projected to be and help bail out the mistake?
Yeah, I think that, you know, we've got really good competition at that position. Those guys all played pretty good the other night, did some good things. And, hopefully they continue to get better and continue to work and take the coaching and go out and execute during practice and carries over to these preseason games. And, you know, I think we've got some interesting discussions as we move forward, you know, here over the next 2-3 weeks as we start to, you know, think about how we're going to whittle the roster down.
You're a truck guy, right?
Yes.
What was your dream car or truck in high school?
4x4, My dad was a Chevy guy. I kind of like Fords for some reason. I ended up with a Dodge, so go figure. but yeah, black pickup, 4x4, slightly lifted.
Yes.
The Dodge truck was
slightly
your first car?
Slightly
first
lifted. Truck? That's key.
My first car was a Chevy S10 4-speed with a toolbox on it.
There were a lot of Chevy S10s in the Mount Juliet parking lot, I can tell you that much, with toolboxes on the back, too.
So did you open the toolbox a lot?
No, there was no tools in it. I just thought
it just came with the truck.
Yeah. Kept the sandwich in there.
See, I had the GMC Sierra. Chad, you had the truck, right?
I had a Jeep Cherokee.
Oh.
SUV, 1989.
Paul, what were you driving around in Jersey?
Well, listen, the first combine I went to, the only rental car they had was a pickup truck. Oh. That's my experience driving a pickup truck. It's parking at the Marriott in Mobile.
It's kind of standard for West Tennessee. So I went from the Chevy S10 to a Dodge Dakota and upgraded to a 5-speed. So I got one more gear.
Nice.
Yeah, it was
first time you actually purchased the car you wanted. When was that? Like, did you purchase the truck you dreamed about?
Probably in Dallas, Texas, 7 or 8, maybe 10 years ago, I got a King Ranch F-150. Again, standard in Texas.
Standard. You have to have it. Have you ever sat shotgun in Steve Underwood's Corvette Stingray?
That would be a negative.
Is anyone, is that a personal rule or you just haven't been invited?
No, no invitation. He's got kind of a heavy foot. I've heard.
He pulled in the other day. That's why I thought about this. He pulled in the other day around the circle.
Really?
And whipped around that flagpole quickly.
His commute is like 90 seconds from where he lives in Germantown. And now that I know he's got a heavy foot, maybe it's 60 seconds.
Yeah, he barks the tires quite often when he's leaving St. Thomas.
I like that.
It's not bad.
Do you believe in distractions as a thing? There's constantly this fan conversation about these things that would distract you. And I just feel like a good football team is going to be able to focus through stuff. And Vrabel said there's going to be something.
Yeah, I think stuff's going to come up, you know, whether it's, you know, football team related or it's life related with a particular player that you just got to kind of work through. Hopefully we have enough resources in place. I do think that we've got a strong enough team, mentally tough team that we can, you know, try to look past or not let those affect them. But if we can minimize as many distractions as possible, and we don't want players worrying about, you know, tickets for Sunday's game on Saturday. And then let's get all that done like early in the week, Tuesday, Wednesday. We try to put the schedule in place so that when it gets closer to game day, that all of that stuff's kind of behind us and we're just ready to focus on the game.
Is there a point throughout your career where you thought the team you were with was truly distracted off the field or just whatever had happened during the week or maybe with travel on a road trip where they actually played well?
Good question.
You know how you get a bad vibe sometimes with anything, not just teams, but with work or whatever.
Yeah. Not off the top of my head. Anytime there's long travel, if it's a long, travel trip or it can be distracting. Yeah, it can be distracting. Yeah.
Did you feel, you're talking about you can kind of sense stuff coming. We felt like during the week in Arizona last year, we weren't going to be surprised if things went well. There was just some kind of feel around the team that week that you kind of stewed in the Arizona loss, and it didn't bode well for what happened in San Francisco. And you're nodding. I'm thinking you felt it.
Sure. I mean, you're not in your normal routine. You know, you're out of what you do daily. You're not. You know, you're sleeping in a hotel bed for 7 days instead of, you know, one or two. You're practicing somewhere different than you normally practice. It's just different. So. Yeah, I would agree that, you know, maybe that was, you know, looking back, coming back across and just working here may have been the play.
Well, how do you translate what you learned from that into the logistics for London?
Spend the least amount of time over there as possible. Not against the folks over there, but, just try to, it's a business trip. So try to plan accordingly with our ops staff and maximize our time so that when we go, we get there, we get a little work, we fulfill all the obligations we have over there from a league standpoint, play the game and come back home and, try to, it's the next game after, you know, after we play one and not let that encompass a big portion of the season, So that's taking a lot of our attention.
It's got to be hard to keep that as a business trip, though, because of all of the obligations you're talking about with the league. I mean, that it's certainly not going to be the standard, but I feel like it's got to be tough to block a lot of that out because you have so many of them.
Yeah, there's appearances that we have to make. You know, we've had meetings about the food. Like, supposedly there's no real bacon over there, so we've got to figure out how we're going to get real bacon over there. So maybe I'll put some in the carry-on.
Is bacon the top of the food list of things that has to make it over
I'm
there?
Trying to eat less bacon. If you couldn't tell by looking at me, I'm trying to.
Are you being serious, though?
Yeah, so the food
you're going
is,
to have to ship bacon.
No,
to
I'm not saying we're going to have to ship bacon, but like we're trying to
they're getting it from Belgium.
They're bringing whole pigs with them.
Correct.
They're going to slaughter them there.
Correct. Got 10 oinkers on the plane.
No, the biggest offensive lineman could be at risk if things go bad.
The food's different. So, yeah. I mean, again, you talk about distractions, and these are routines that players, they get up and they eat the same thing every time. And if they're used to eating scrambled eggs and bacon and biscuits, and they have, you know, Vegemite and crumpets, like, might not go too well for us.
Tea instead of coffee.
That's a good example, though. Is there another food you can think of that's mandatory for a football team to have around?
Chicken.
That maybe's not there? Chicken,
yeah. Grilled chicken. Like, if we, there's no telling how many birds we eat a day. There's a lot.
Surely they've got chickens over there.
I would think there's probably some yard bird roaming around somewhere in London.
How many advanced trips have made by your people?
Several. I think 3 or 4 over there. We've had a couple meetings here, several conference calls, talked a little bit in the combine back in February, just some pre-planning stuff, and then the owners meeting. So, yeah, a lot of preparation, a lot of hard work, a lot of man hours have gone into making sure that trip goes as smooth as possible for us.
Titans general manager John Robinson in studio with us. Film study. I mentioned this last segment with you. Bill Belichick would spend 20 to 30 minutes on a single play at times, breaking down every facet of what happened in that play. Are you that meticulous in how you watch film during the offseason in particular?
Depends on what's going on. I mean, I'm not really looking at it from an X and O standpoint all the time. Certainly if it looks like there's a breakdown, I'll make note of that and make sure I ask questions about that. Or if there's a situation that comes up, I'll ask about, well, why did we play it this way? Or this was a great job handling this situation. This time of the year, I'm kind of toiling through these preseason games, trying to, cause there's going to be 37 guys that are going to get, you know, have to be released from all the clubs, and trying to find one or two guys that might improve our roster. So that's what myself and our scouts are going through right now, is just combing through those preseason games and seeing, you know, the guys that we kind of like coming out of college, but specifically the rookies, are they showing up in the preseason games? And if they become available, could they help our team?
Is it possible for you guys to have too much Patriots influence? You got Logan Ryan, Josh Klein, Deion Lewis, Malcolm Butler, Dean Pease, Mike Vrabel. You're imitating Belichick with the no injury talk, which frankly should have some rings before you go that direction. Is it possible for you to do too much that makes you, I see headlines all the time about Patriots South. It's not really the way we talk here, but.
Yeah. I mean, I think for us, it's, we're the Tennessee Titans. This just was kind of a stop on our journey here in life, was that time in New England. We certainly all learned a lot while we were up there. And we're our own individual. Like I'm me, and Vrabel he's his version of himself. So, take all the things that we learn and kind of put our own spin on it. And, you know, that's what we're going to try to do.
There's an old adage that some scouts would say, and some coaches, you don't have backup quarterbacks in this league. You have quarterbacks you believe can eventually be a starter in this league. Is that the case for every position? How do you go about evaluating, okay, this is a place where we can actually afford to use a roster spot on a project or a developmental talent versus a guy that we actually believe should be on the roster because he's starting in a year or two?
Yeah, I mean, I think philosophically for me, it's really more role specific. You know, what's the player's role on the football team? Certainly you want guys that can develop into starting level, you know, abilities for their respective positions. But that's not the case. The likelihood of having 53 guys who are going to be starting, legit starting level NFL players, there's guys that line up and start that aren't really starters. I mean, that's just the way the league is. But we try to have good depth at all the positions as possible. Try to coach them up with techniques and all that. And then, you know, the kicking game is paramount, you know, for having carving out a role on an NFL team, you know, because you've only got 46 helmets that you get to give out on game day, and somebody's got to play special teams, and it's not going to be the backup center or the backup tackle.
We strive when we get a quality guest or John Robinson in for an hour like this to not just make it a straight Q&A, but to incorporate you into the show. So we have this game that we play. It's a Chad invention from when he used to be exiled to 6 o'clock, where we ask one question. Chad, describe the game. It's your game.
Yeah, the game is, it's a simple premise, John. One question, two answers. We throw out one question. You give two answers, one from sports, one that's anything outside of sports. Could be history, politics, entertainment, pop culture, wherever you want to go. It's that simple.
So hit us with today's question, and we'll go around the table. Hopefully David's ready, too, and we'll maybe just keep it in-house.
Yes. Today's question, best technician. Best technician of their craft. Sports and non-sports answer. I'm thinking of almost like something fundamental. Someone you watch and you think, boy, they're really good at what they do, and it's because they're such a good technician of what they do.
And
can I give my example?
Give an example, and then we'll ask John if he wants to go last or first or what feels comfortable.
Sports, Tommy Mansky. Tommy Mansky is the ultimate technician. We all saw those ads back in the day for baseball and how you could make baseball a technical sport. I remember me and my friends would like field ground balls in practice and do that little jump stop where you get the arm back, you know, 90 degrees, then go through with it.
We all wanted to be the kid turning two in that commercial.
Fred McGriff with a huge bucket hat.
The commercial's still airing. It's like from when Fred McGriff was in his third year.
It was so great.
He's in the Hall of Fame, isn't he?
When I think of technician, I think Tom Emanski video. Tom Emanski, the ultimate sports technician.
You should recreate that video, John.
I was actually a pretty good baseball player.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Catcher?
Giddy up. And first base.
I think we've talked about that.
Would you describe yourself as a technician, as a catcher?
No, it was just guts and glory back then. I was trying to stop the ball.
Have you heard Big Al at the Little League World Series,
Love
the introduction?
I have, yeah. Dinger.
Oh,
yeah,
he hits dingers.
Big dinger.
We say it sounds a little bit like John McClane and Jeff Fisher. There's like an in-between with the voice for Big Al from Jersey. So it's awesome.
Could be John McClane's unknown son. Big Al.
My sports answer, I immediately thought of Roger Federer when it came to technician on the tennis court. I watched the guy play, and he's so fundamentally sound in everything.
He's clinical.
Yes.
Two of us went tennis. I go John McEnroe, but that's a different thing of tennis because he was at the net, and I'm thinking of him with drop shots and angles and the geometry. I thought super technically sound in terms of playing all that stuff to his advantage, a kind of tennis that we don't see anymore.
Well, going back to Hutton's Roger Federer, I think of the Swiss as a very clinical people.
Precise. The watches.
The watch, clocks. The Swiss Army knife, the Roman Yossi, is a very clinical, precise technician of his craft. Maybe it's something with the Swiss people.
Read your thoughts.
So, Chad, I will see your Tom Emanski and raise you Ted Williams, who literally wrote the book on hitting, the science of hitting, which as a 13-year-old, it may well has been, you know, Chinese to me. I tried to figure this out. I did not figure it out. It was so clinical, like it was above me. Probably, it's full of actuary tables, basically, John. So,
oh, here we go. Actuary tables.
I've still got my copy of it, I think.
Do you really?
In my closet.
Yeah, I probably still couldn't figure it out.
I think I kind of got it.
Ted Williams, who had the ultimate comeback to an umpire he was arguing with, he rarely argued balls and strikes, but one time he did, and the umpire chirped back to him, and he said, I'm the one who batted over 400 last year and walked more than any player in Major League history. I know what a bleeping strike looks like, and that wasn't one. That's what Ted Williams said to him. Got him run from the game, got him tossed, but probably couldn't argue with that.
Who you like, John?
And I would go... I don't know how many golf tournaments he won, but Jack Nicklaus, the golden bear.
It's a great one.
Yeah. I mean, I wish I could master the swing technique that he probably still has. I'm not very good at golf.
I'm sure you heard the LeBeau story. Who was it? Who was he with? Was it Jack or was it Arnie? It was Jack. He played around with Jack in Ohio and he was between clubs and Jack told him, just hit it hit it one notch higher. Hit the seven, but hit it two grooves higher. LeBeau was like, yeah, I can hit it two grooves higher. Yeah.
Good luck.
Yeah,
with that.
Yeah,
thanks,
that's
Jack.
No problem.
Were you glued to the TV like we were on Sunday?
I had it. What were we doing? So we were working, but I had it on, and it was pretty cool to watch Tiger kind of roar back there.
Nashville was the sixth highest rated market in the country for Sunday's PGA Championship.
See, I read that if there's no local interest, as the sixth laziest market in the country, like the sixth most people stayed home on their couch instead of going out and doing something.
A lot of disposable income in Nashville. Yeah. That's the way you read that.
Watching their big TV. What's your non-sports?
Non-sports, Jerry Seinfeld. Listen to Jerry Seinfeld talk about how he deconstructs a joke and how he writes out everything that he says in a stand-up act and even the pacing of it and the words, you know, just one little word that we wouldn't think about and how it makes it funnier. When I think of a joke technician, I think Jerry Seinfeld.
My non-sports, I just go with my first answer that comes to mind. I enjoy watching the White House press briefings to see how Sarah Huckabee Sanders will answer questions because she has an answer for everything. It doesn't matter what side of the aisle you're on with that. She is a technician in the way she handles the press corps at the White House.
Her technical adeptness begins with, listen, you idiot. Yeah. Here's what it is. I went the same way that you did, Hutt, with my first impression, which was Meryl Streep, who's played like every role.
Your co-star.
I co-starred with her in The Deer Hunter, and she went on to big things, and me not so much.
She was less blurry than Paul in that film.
I think that,
did you
as
see
I've
this picture
said
Paul
before,
sent out, by the way?
I'll show it to you during the break.
Okay, so Paul sends out this picture of him and the deer hunter. He was a little boy as an extra. And he's like, puts an arrow on the picture, like, there's me right there. And it's just this blurb, this blob on the screen. You can't tell who it is at all.
Like, seriously, you were in the movie?
As in the wedding and the reception scenes in the movie.
Look at you.
In one version, you were edited out of another.
Well, I'm there. It's whether you can see me on the screen or not. I've got physical evidence that I was there. Yeah, you can't find me, but you find me in this picture of Christopher Walken. I just think I think 90% of actors, most of us could do it. It's just pretending. But the 10% or however many percent I've said in the past are spectacular at it. She's spectacular at it. She just knows how to do it in a way that most people don't.
I looked at radio and Glenn Beck and the Glenn Beck radio program. I had a professor in college who kind of foresaw the infotainment taking off, and he was all about it until it was someone on the opposing side of the aisle from where he stood. Mm-hmm. Then all of a sudden he hated Glenn Beck. But Glenn Beck, it's just the show flows so well. He's so good at what he does, in and out of breaks, which is one of the hardest things to do in the radio business. But the show flows so well, and he's so well prepared, and the whole thing just... You listen for 2 hours and you think you've been listening for 10 minutes because it just flows that easy.
Like the show.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't know where you find him these days. What's he on? Like some website that ends in
CA? He's on his own media platform, Paul. You should maybe perhaps study that.
CA. He's like a Canadian?
Mine's a .com. I don't know.
Well, is he Canadian?
Heard of
Canadian
a little thing called the Blaze, Paul?
What do you think non-sports, John?
And then I had two, and I went back and forth on this. Back home, we had a guy who was the king of hitting dingers in slow pitch softball. And he was also the town diesel mechanic, Mustard.
Was his name Big Al?
No, it was Mustard.
Mustard.
Mustard, I mean, he could fix any diesel problem that you had. So Mustard at Mustard's Garage was A for me. Second was Jeff Bezos, who has got Amazon. I get a package every day, it seems like. I don't know what we're ordering. So it was a close battle between Mustard and Jeff, but Jeff ended up winning out for me.
Now, does Mustard's Garage still exist?
I don't think so.
Okay, gone away.
We got to get the sign.
I'm trying to get a tweet out about Mustard's. This because the name Mustard is just so perfect.
Random question
especially
for you.
For a technician. By the way, Jeff Bezos now the richest man in modern history. I don't know if you guys saw this the other day, but they have rated him as the richest man in modern history. The problem with that is, though, a lot of scholars out there, they debate how you measure wealth because there are some Saudi princes and other people who have owned different masses of land in different countries.
With oil
and
it's difficult.
It's difficult to know valuation of land holdings for different individuals out there to measure true wealth. He's right up there, though, either way.
I'll say this, like that Amazon thing, he's got that thing cooking.
He does.
John, what do you do with all the Titans gear that you have from over the years?
There's a lot of in West Tennessee being sported around by my family. hand it down. I wear some of it. Some of it I never really get to, but I pass it down to the folks back home.
You have a favorite shirt that you wear more often than not?
I have a sweatshirt that I work out in the mornings. And if you were to see it, it's been washed probably at least, I don't know, 600 times. It's tattered. It's torn. The sleeves have ripped off somewhat, but I still wear it. It's comfortable.
Earlier, I wanted to ask you about development. I mean, I know a later round draft pick, oftentimes you're expecting to develop a guy, but the clock is faster than ever before. The roster spots are more important. How long can you take to develop a guy anymore in the NFL?
Yeah, I mean, guys develop at different paces. We grade everything on a 2-year scale. Hopefully by the end of their second season, going into their third season, or by at some point in their second season, whatever role that we have kind of graded them or pigeonholed them into, that they've at least met that level of evaluation. And if not, it doesn't mean that he might not come on there in year three. But year two is, you know, the rookie year is a tough year. There's a lot of ups and downs. You're learning the pro game, you know, your new city and all that. So by their second year, certainly going into the third year, you hope you're getting some returns.
Is there a player that has developed the most from day one of camp one since you've been here to, what, day 13 of camp?
Yeah, I think really this these rookie free agent receivers, whether it's Ross or Batson or Burnett or V, I mean, I think all of those guys, they're all different packages. But I think those guys have really gotten better as camp has gone along.
What do you notice a difference in now? I know you were dealing with guys on a different level when you went from scouting a kid on a college campus to drafting guys. But I'm wondering how much a difference you see between the kid you had at the beginning of your time in the NFL and the kid you're coming on to now in terms of the millennial stuff, the attention span, all of that stuff. How different?
Yeah, I mean, I do think there is a difference kind of in the way that when I first hit the road, I had a flip phone. And now all these guys, they have iPads, they have iPhones, they have information at their fingertips and communication ability all the time with these smartphones. So I think the attention span thing is something we try to take breaks in meetings and keep it fresh and keep it life form, give them breaks so that they're grasping what we're trying to install. But I do think that it's a little different. It's not bad different. It's not good different. I just think it's different.
Do you get the sense that because there's so much information out there, I feel like younger generations now, they're always questioning everything. They always want to know why right then and there. And I feel like when we grew up and we played sports, if a coach told you to run a suicide, you weren't asking why. You just did it. I don't remember questioning anything my coaches were telling me as a kid. I just went out there and played hard and did it. Nowadays, it's like you have to write a thesis for a player to tell them why they need to do this technically during a game. Do you sense some of that with guys today?
Yeah, I mean, we get that from our scouts with some of the players that they're on the road, you know, taking a look at from sources that they talk to at these colleges or around the country, that, you know, player X, for whatever reason, like we ask him to do this or ask him to do that, and it's like trying to pull teeth with the guy to try to get him to do, because he wants to know this, or he wants, to your point, a thesis about why he's got to do it. And we try not to add those guys to the team, obviously. But I don't know why it is, but it seems like there's a difference in, to your point. I can remember when I was in college going into my junior year. I mean, I popped my hamstring like really, really good, and I show up for training camp, and I guess my coach thought I was faking or something. He was like, you're not getting out of the conditioning test. And I was like, okay, coach, I'll run it with a pulled hamstring. So I ran the conditioning test.
And the back of your leg's probably completely black and blue at that point.
Yeah, it was painful, but I did the conditioning test because that's what the coach told me to do. So
are there enough throwback personality types out there of guys that they just go into battle and do what's asked of them and don't ask a lot of questions, where you can field an entire professional football team of those guys? Or do you have to mix in some guys who are going to ask questions about everything you tell them to do?
No, I think that's one of the things that we try to do a good job of is telling them the why. Here's what we're going to ask you to do, and here's why we're going to ask you to do it. So that when we get to game time, they know the game plan, they know what's going to be asked of them, they know what their role is specific to that, you know, to that game, so that we can all go out and execute as a team.
We've discussed this before in-house. It seems like you've got a guy in every room that's kind of the veteran leader, outspoken, everything. Who's the guy in the receiver room that can play that role right now, especially if Rashard's not active? And you could feel free to give us some news on him.
Nice try there, Paul. It was good effort. I think Rob Moore, who's been, I know it's not a player, but you know, Rob played in this league. He was a high pick, and he's got an extensive history with this league and making it in this league. And now he's, you know, a good coach for us. I think he has done a really good job with that position group and shedding some light on the game, the NFL game, about life in general. And then I think that's a good, you know, that's a good group. That's a good tight group. And they're all working hard to try to get better.
John Robinson in studio with us.
Is it too early? You're going to kill me for asking this one. Is it too early to call the relatively good health that you've had over the last 2 years a trend that says that you guys are doing something right?
Yeah, knock on wood as I pound my head. I think that, again, I said it earlier, the health and safety of our players is at the, you know, first of the top of the list of what's important to us. I think our training staff, Todd Torselli and his group, Tom Canavia and the strength staff, do a good job of trying to get these players, our players' bodies ready for a rigorous season of NFL football. And we try to stress the importance that their bodies are what's going to allow them to have successful careers in the NFL. You know, you can't just go get your ankles taped, go out and practice, and then go to the cafeteria and go sit and study tape. You've got to get treatment. You've got to take care of your body. That's the way the game is. And the more we stress it, and we stress it every day about taking care of your bodies, hit the cold tubs, go in for post-practice treatment so that you're healthy and you're able to go out and play and practice. You're
talking a lot about keeping guys healthy. You know, I don't want it to be a year-long theme. I talked to Vrabel about it on Saturday, but I think people want to know at least why. Why is it so important that we not know what's up with Rashard Evans when you marketed him, when people might be coming out to practice to see him? What would blow up if we knew Rashard Evans has a toe and could be out for two more weeks? How would that make the organization not function?
Yeah, I think it's just it's philosophical. It's something that, you know, that we believe in. I'll disclose that my low back was a little snug yesterday. I think I'm probable for Saturday.
Game, so you don't have to deal with the flight, at least.
Exactly. It's just, we're trying to protect the players and trying to protect the team. It's something that, you know, that we believe in. And when the league tells us we've got to start releasing all that information, that's what we'll do.
How does it protect Corey Davis if you guys are holding him out because of his workload? And all of Nashville is saying, this guy's soft. He can't even make it to the fourth practice. That doesn't seem to me to be protecting Corey Davis. That seems to me to be creating a public buzz that creates an issue with Corey Davis that doesn't exist.
Yeah, I think if you were out there and saw Corey when he was, you know, when he was running and making plays, then you would see, and nothing's more important to Corey and a lot of our players than being out there and helping the team. And when they're available to get back out there and participate at 100%, that's what we'll do.
How will you decide in these next couple of days? Mike said he and Dirk probably go to separate fields. How do you decide what to watch? And it's probably very fear of missing out, I would imagine you have here, if you're on the one field with the offense and you hear an explosion from the defensive field.
Yeah, well, it's a beauty that we film all that stuff. So I may not see it real time, but I'll see it at some point after practice. But I'll probably float. I'll probably do offense one day and defense another day, you know, just to watch our guys, how they compete against each other.
John, how do you feel about this team today compared to how you felt last August? Is it about the same? Are you more comfortable with the direction that everything is headed now compared to a year ago? How would you term that?
No, I mean, I think I'm really proud of the guys. I'm proud of the way they've worked in the offseason program, you know, for buying into the coaching change. And I think they've been extremely receptive and they're excited about the direction that we're headed. You can kind of get a sense of it. It's a lot of the same faces that are back. We didn't lose a ton. We've added some new guys and I'm excited about the season. I think that, I'm excited about how close the team is. I'm excited about some of the things we've done so far in training camp. And, you know, we'll see what it's going to be. You know, we'll take it one game at a time. It's the old adage, and it's often said, but that's truly what we're trying to do is, get through training camp, get better, improve, knock these preseason games out and get ready for Miami.
We can sum up this hour with one tweet from Yale Miller, who says, I'm from Union City and can honestly say it never occurred to me that I would hear about mustard on 104.5 The Zone, or probably any other station outside of WENK in Union City.
Is that the swap shots?
1240 right there. Swap shot.
Can we get mustard to, if you invite mustard to a game, can we have him as a guest?
Alive?
Is mustard alive?
You know what? I don't know.
How about mustard's kids?
Probably.
Do you have a big family? Let's get them to a game.
I left when I was 18, and to be honest, about 30 minutes ago was the first time I ever thought of mustard in a long time.
You haven't kept up with mustard since?
You know, what's funny is that in a town not too far away from Union City, there's a guy named Ketchup.
Hey, Reed, let's do a podcast on the whereabouts of mustard. We'll start an entire series on searching for mustard.
These guys love this. They're figuring out what happened to Natalie Wood, and mustard will be
I was going to see if he could play first base for us come out next spring. So.
Dave's a big softball player. He'll take another kid that hits stingers.
What's the rest of your day like on a day off for players?
Head back and dive back into these preseason games. I started a game yesterday, and I finally finished it with the, you know, knocks on the door and can I get 5 minutes? Can I get 2 minutes? I finished it, you know, last night and started one this morning, and hopefully I'll get that one finished before, you know, before dinner.
Is it that slow too? Because you're sorting through who's in the game. I mean,
I print the rosters out and you're kind of, you know, you're like, who's this guy or who's that guy? Or you circle guys that you kind of liked in the draft, or, you know, they may be a year in, maybe they were in camp last year and they're back again for their second season. You kind of watch those guys and then try to see who pops off the tape.
Do you trust the scouting staff to, if you divvy these up a bit, to give their full report, or do you have to watch it on your own?
I try to watch it on my own. They'll dive into it on, you know, with their specific teams that they're responsible for. I certainly trust those guys. You know, this is going into year three with the system, and we'll put our preseason board together and grade those guys accordingly, and we're gonna have meetings probably mid next week. To talk through, you know, how they like guys.
Remember, Paul, what he told us. The best written reports by the scouting staff, always written by John Robinson. No one writes a better report.
So I say the same thing about everything written at paulkuherski.com. Nothing better than the stuff written by the owner of the site.
Was this hour long for you?
On to the dentist.
You know what? We're 58. It actually flew by. It wasn't as painful as I thought.
Uh-huh.
I don't know that I'm going to volunteer to come back tomorrow.
See you next week. No, this is the beginning of our week. We're proud to announce the beginning of our weekly visits.
When we come back, a big announcement.
We didn't endure a segment a week with Rustin Webster to not get the payoff with you. That's a God's honest truth.
Hashtag the mustard hour.
John, thank you. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, guys.
Titans general manager John Robinson has been our guest.